Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? WashableSofas.com has your back. Featuring the Anabe Collection, the only designer sofa that's machine washable inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slipcovers made with performance fabrics. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Check out WashableSofas.com and get up to 60% off your Anabe sofa, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, Hotel Mars. David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show, joins me. And we're thrilled to welcome Dr. Simone Marquet, who is an institute scientist at the Southwest Research Institute in Boulder, Colorado. Most importantly, he is the author, with his colleague Jun Koranaga, of an article that may explain everything about how lucky we are to be on planet Earth, a consequence of collisions that are unimaginable, but there they are. The article is entitled "The Shaping of Terrestrial Planets by Late Accretions." Terrestrial planets is the search for exoplanets. So while this begins with our solar system, it points to the possibilities of what we're looking for, what questions we should ask about the planets we find out there. And I'm thinking particularly of the TRAPPIST system mentioned in the article. Simone, wonderful. Congratulations. Welcome. The determination here is late accretions shape a planet's fate. Late accretions are the last 1%. But let's picture what happened after the first solids formed spinning around the sun. How did the planets come together before we get to the last 1%? Good evening to you.
Yes, and thanks for having me today here. This is a big question that you're asking. So I'll do my best in a few seconds to summarize what took hundreds of millions of years in real time. We have to imagine going back all the way to the beginning of the solar system. We had a young sun and surrounded by a disk of gas and dust, what astronomers call dust, or just the tiny particles, the solid particles, little rocks, if you will. And as the time went by, those little rocks started to accrete and form in larger objects. We refer to this larger object as planetesimals, which means small planets. And as the time went by, planetesimals, those small planets, started to accrete one another by collisions and forming larger planets. Now, this is a very simplified way, but it will give you a gist of what we think might have happened. And that's how, by increasing in size, the terrestrial planets were formed. Of course, the process wasn't as smooth as I depicted. There are lots of little details, but that's how we think the Earth formed, and it took about anything in between 50 to 100 million years for this process to be completed. And the same process also applies to the other terrestrial planets, that is to say Mercury, Mars, the Earth, and also Venus. So this is the first stage of the what we call the accretion of the planets. Now, when the planets were fully formed, meaning they basically reached the size or the mass that they currently have, the process wasn't completed yet, because there were still lots of planetesimals around in the disk, around the sun. Therefore, some of these objects could have collided with the planets as they were fully formed. And that is the phase that we call late accretion. Late meaning because the planets were already formed, so it took some time to get there. And accretion because it's a phase in which smaller objects were colliding with the Earth and the other planets as well. And so they kept accreting onto them.
David, you have a question for Simone.
Yes, so when the planetesimals collide, I would imagine they're blown into dust and all sorts of little particles. When they accrete, what holds the particles to the bigger mass so that they eventually build on top of that to make the planet larger? Is it just gravity? Or is there some kind of super glue, or what holds those little pieces to Earth, say, or to the others that keeps making it get bigger?
Yeah, that's basically gravity. The objects were large enough that any infalling planetesimal would be, as you said, completely destroyed by the energy. These are incredibly energetic events. So the object will be completely destroyed, you know, pulverized, even vaporized, because the energy is so high that some of the rocks will vaporize right away. But all that material, it remain bound to a large planet such as the Earth. There is really no hope for any of that material to be released because the gravity is so high. Now, that might be different for the Moon. The Moon, it is a much smaller object, therefore gravity is much lower. And in fact, if you had an asteroid colliding with the Moon, it is expected that the fraction of its mass would not be retained by the Moon, it would go back into space. But that's not the case for the larger planets such as Venus, the Earth, and even Mars.
I began to think of these as the Goldilocks and the Three Bears. One too hot, one too cold, one just right. That would be Earth. And So what we have are three possibilities, maybe four. We'll add in Mercury if it's a planet formed. And three possibilities. And if I understand correctly, the reason late accretions matter is because what hits at the velocity it hits, where it hits, creating both the internal heat of the planet, we're lucky enough to have one here, and the atmosphere and everything that comes after that. Have I got that generally right? Would you please explain what happens in those last accretions as they strike?
Yes, I think you got it right, the general sense. There is another important variable to consider that, of course, is also the heliocentric distance, meaning the distance from the sun, which would imply, for instance, if you are farther away, generally speaking, the surface conditions are cooler than if you are closer to the sun. So that is also an important factor. But the idea behind this paper, which is a review paper in a sense that summarizes all that we know, we have learned in the last 10 years or so, there's been a great improvement in the way we understand this process, and so that's why it justified review paper. The important aspect here that I find personally extremely fascinating and intriguing is that, okay, you imagine that the planets formed, and so we already said, right, we have Venus, we have the Earth and Mars. They are different distances from the sun, so we might expect some different conditions. They also have different sizes. They're not all the same size. That's true for Mars, which is significantly smaller. But if you just for a moment look at the Earth and Venus, which is, considered Earth's sister planets in many ways. They're relatively similar in size, they're relatively similar in distance from the sun, and yet those two planets could not be more different than they are. In fact, it's one of the puzzle, I think. And so what are the ways we can explain these key differences? And there's been many theories. What we explore in our work is the effect of this last bit of accretion, this 1% at the end, once the planets were really formed. And what we see is that those latest impacts that were still at a very large scale would have been able to radically alter the properties of the planet in a way that it's almost a random evolution, in the sense that if you have a collision of a certain magnitude, you can go that way. If you don't have that collision, you go the other way, and the planet evolution will diverge drastically. In other words, the way we see the Earth today is the results of a number of these random events. And I wonder if the Earth could have gone completely in a different direction had one of those events, for instance, had a different magnitude or different properties. And so by thinking about this, we can perhaps rationalize or understand some of the key difference between Venus and the Earth. And so that's one of the key points that we make. But extrapolating a little bit more, we can also understand some of the key properties of Mars, for instance, and why they are different than the other planets. So it's more of a general process.
David, you have a question.
So the particles colliding with these four terrestrial planets, although you don't mention Mercury very often, are they comparable in size and quality to what's colliding on Venus, Earth, and Mars? Or could the difference be that for some reason the particles colliding themselves are very different from one another? So I guess that's what I'm trying to understand. Could the difference be in the kind of particles each planet is attracting, or does that make a difference?
Yeah. We think, for what we can say based on our modeling understanding, that there isn't really a strong case to imagine that these objects were radically different in terms of properties. In fact, all of these planets, and certainly true for Venus and Earth, that they are so close, but I would argue the same applies also for the most part for Mars. They formed out of the same raw material. Yes, there could have been some minor difference in terms of the chemistry, you know, in terms of the rock composition, but those would be completely negligible for what we are saying here. So we can assume in that regard that those objects colliding are pretty much all the same. What's important to realize, though, maybe I didn't specify that earlier, but I want to clarify that when you say particles, it might give the impression that these are perhaps relatively small objects. But the key aspect here is that early on in the early solar system, as the planets were forming, there were massive objects left over flying around these planetesimals. Now, we don't really know what the size was, but we can guess. And so some of these early impactors were on a massive scale, say hundreds of kilometers in size. Now, to give you a term of comparison, the famous Chicxulub impact that resulted into the extinction of the dinosaur was 10 kilometers in size, which was really massive and large. But here we are thinking of course, there were 10 kilometer impactor back then as well. It's not like they were not there, but those did not much in comparison to the much larger that were striking the Earth and the other planets as well.
We just have a minute for this part of the commentary, so I want to make certain I say this correctly. Venus, covered in a very thick cloud, our twin but not, a larger than 1,000-kilometer impactor at 40 kilometers a second, which is what the number you use in the article, that creates conditions that generates that atmosphere. Is that correct?
Yes, not only that, it could generate that atmosphere, it could explain why there isn't water at the surface, it could explain also why the Venus, for all that we know, it's a very volcanic active place. In fact, there are lots of volcanoes on the surface of Venus, many more than on Earth. And an estimate is that the surface of the planet is relatively young, meaning perhaps a few hundreds of billions of years. It's younger than a portion of the surface of the Earth by a lot. And so that would imply lots of volcanism, resurfacing volcanic flows, and that, in fact, could be the result of the collisions that you just described that could have happened very, very early on.
When we come back, Simone Marque is going to have an unlimited budget.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.